Recently, it's more like, yeah, live, trip, fall, feel the pain, love it, get up, try to do things, trip again, it's okay, get up.
What's up, everyone? You're listening to the Do Hard Things podcast by Elite SRS. The purpose of this show is to share stories of hardship and victory as an encouragement for those in the middle of their own hard thing. Because we know hardship produces perseverance, which produces character, which ultimately produces hope. Today's guest is Ryan Alonzo. Ryan, also known as Skipman in the Philippines, is a two-time Guinness World Record holder. He holds the record for both the most double-unders in 12 hours with over 40,000 and the most consecutive crosses at over 3,000. Ryan talks about the difficulty of those endeavors and his most recent efforts to be a better friend by sharing his own flaws. If you enjoy the show, please don't forget to subscribe and leave a review so more people can be encouraged by the stories we share. Now here's the conversation with Ryan Alonzo. Before we get started, I wanted to make sure everyone knows about our Jump Rope Weekend we're hosting September 9th through 11th in Leavenworth, Washington. I could not be more excited for an event. At Elite SRS, we want to see more people jumping rope, and this event is going to do just that in two ways. First, through teaching in workshops with pro instructors like Learning the Ropes, We Jump Rope, and Let's Jump LA. And second, through entertainment with our street-style competition, the Jump Rope Throwdown, featuring some of the best jumpers in the world. Some have even called it the Hall of Fame of Jump Rope. You won't want to miss it. You can find the link to register in today's episode description. Okay, now here's my conversation with Ryan Alonzo. All right, Ryan Alonzo, otherwise known as Skipman to those in the jump rope world, but happy to have you on the Do Hard Things podcast. And looking forward to hearing your story. The way I like to start these conversations a lot of time is when people ask you what you do, how do you answer them?
I'm actually a businessman. I in the Philippines, so I run with some partners. I run two businesses related to the food industry. That's me. It's related to baking. So some people would know me more as a baker or a businessman. Then they would just get surprised that, what is this guy doing in
So as a baker, meaning that you also are doing the baking?
Before I was doing the baking, but now I'm more on the business side already. Yeah.
Okay. Is that a family thing or do you get into it with friends?
Yeah. So I have two businesses. One is with my family, which my dad started many years back. I'm helping there now. And another is me and some friends. We did start a bakery a few years ago.
Yeah. I've never been to the Philippines. But I'm curious if a Filipino bakery would be different than a bakery in the United States and how different that they might be.
Definitely, because every country would have their own taste preference, the type of breads or cakes that they would prefer. Some countries like sweeter, softer breads. Some countries would like the more rustic sourdough feel. So really depends per country. But as I see now, everyone's adapting to what the world has to offer. So all these cultures and of the flavors and all there, we're all like starting to learn about other countries. So it's very interesting.
Yeah, it's getting globalized and there's less distinct differences.
Yeah.
Across the board. So what's like the signature Filipino bakery baked good item?
Everyone knows the pandesal. It's like the typical Filipino bread that everyone, it's just like a soft roll, small piece of roll that everyone buys in the morning, dips it in coffee and eats it.
In their coffee?
Yeah, they dip it in coffee because Philippines, our coffee is usually with milk, sweetened, and I don't know, for some reason, we like to dunk our bread and coffee and eat it.
Yeah, so it's not just a dip, it's a full dunk. Get it fully submersed in there.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think I would like the Filipino style of coffee. I'm all about having a little bit of coffee with my creamer. So I think that sounds excellent. I am curious if you already had a business with your parents or your family, why you decided to start a second business. Like, did you just have a lot of free time? Was it a passion project type of a thing? What was the motivation?
I could say it's a little of a lot of things, but working in the family business, I'd like to try something else. Of course, still related to my passion, which is still in baking. My family business is distributing bakery ingredients, while my personal business with friends is the actual bake shop, because I do love baking. That's my passion. So I started it with my friends. Aside from that, I also wanted to have my own personal income. But I guess the biggest thing for me is to look for something that's just me, a challenge for me to do. Because, you know, going into a family business that's already been there for 30 years when I got there, everything's established. And mm-hmm. I always love the feeling of starting something from scratch and really getting a feel of what is the business world? What does it have to offer? What are the challenges?
Yeah, I caught your pun too, starting something from scratch. That was good. Baking pun. But I think that's a good segue into, you know, something else that I've known about you being in the jump rope community. And that's that you know, speaking of challenges, have sought out quite a few of those with a jump rope. And I'd be curious to know, I'll let you kind of share what those challenges are, but why you have sought out these hard things with a jump rope.
Definitely. Sometimes I'm joking around with my friends right before my last attempt for the world record, standing in stage, pressure was on, everyone was looking at me, and I was just a few minutes before starting, I was asking my friends like, why do I do this to myself?
That's the question.
Yeah, why? So to give a background on thankfully, the two achievements that I got was the first, it was two world records. Last October, I got the most number of double under skips in 12 hours. So that was 12 hours of, you can take rest, you can take break, but the 12 hours is the time limit that you have to do as many as you can. Thankfully, we got to even double the record that was the target. So we needed to do 20,000, we got to do 40,000 something. Just a few weeks ago or a month ago, the other record we did was the most number of consecutive crisscross or the jump rope crossover. This one was a lot more pressured because you trip, then you start from the beginning.
Yeah. And
I would say that my first world record was a lot about physical endurance. Still a mental thing. I would always consider any sport activity a mental thing, always. But that one was really a very physically taxing world record. For the one I did last month, that one is definitely mental. It was a mental tidal wave hitting me. Yeah. Which I signed up for myself. Yeah. So wow. If the question is, why do I do it? A lot would be having to prove myself something. Maybe because from the past, I was almost labeled I was labeled like a quitter. Like I could start something, but I can't end it. I start something, can't end it. And also another thing that could be not really labeled to me, but something that I felt I was when I was studying, I was a mediocre student. I was really not the achiever type of student. So, but somewhere along in life, like college or a few years after college, I tried to realize that you only live once, cliche, but it's true. Yeah. And just make the most out of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the third thing is it could be my frustration as well from another sport I had, because I love basketball. That's my sport since high school. I love playing basketball. But then there's something with me in games, in actual games, not just pickup games, but on real, like, because I joined this little leagues where you compete against other people. And when it's practice, I could score more than half the team's points. But when it's in the game, wow, I really choke up. And it's almost like I feel, I can see my teammates looking at me like, why are you so good in practice? But then during the game, what happened, man? So it's almost like I felt like, am I like a choker, a guy who's just nervous? And that's what made me really want to do my second world record just recently, because I'm like, if I'm a choker, then someone who folds under pressure, then this record is the one that would really make me maybe take that thing away or
yeah,
definitely. Yeah, something for me to answer it, I guess.
Yeah.
That's like more than 30 minutes of crisscross that you couldn't trip. And the pressure of going really close to the number, the last 300, 200, the last 50 to the number, pressure is so great. My gosh. But thankfully we did.
Wow. Yeah. So it sounds like there was this almost effort or attempt to rewrite your identity a little bit, at least the stories that you had been telling yourself about who you were through these challenges, and proving to yourself, maybe to some other people who had also labeled you that way, that they weren't true, and set yourself on a different trajectory almost. Is that a fair way to summarize it?
Yep, I would say.
Did it work?
Did it work? I would say it's always a work in progress, because doubts would always come, just like fear would always come. It would never go away. But I guess these things help. And yeah, I guess at the end of the day, I always think at the end of the day, I'm glad I did this to at least maybe prove to myself in some sense that no one should be able to box anyone. No one should be able to just judge someone as being like that.
Yeah, no, that's really good. We could end the thing right here, right now after that. I think that's such an encouragement for people to hear, like, you know, you accomplished this hard thing, or you got through this hard season and the reward is there, but at the same time, it's like, life's not over. You have to keep going through it and keep growing, and it's an ongoing battle, but you know, it's somewhat within your control to shape what it is that you do moving forward, and what you say about yourself and what other people say about you. So just, I'm going to give a little context for the two things that you did. So the 40,000 something double unders in 12 hours, a double under, for people who don't know, is the jump rope goes under your feet twice with one jump. And the record before was like 20,000. So you more than doubled it. For context, how many, because I can't do the math that fast, how many double unders is that in like a minute for 12 hours? What's the average?
I aim for around 70 to 75 per minute, but there would be minutes that I would be taking a break. So right. I had like a schedule. So in a 60 minute hour, there would be a good 50 minutes of action. Mm-hmm. Then I would split that 10 minutes in that 60 minute hour. I would split maybe a 1 minute break here, a 1 minute break here, and a larger break in the end of the hour. So maybe if you average, it could be maybe just 60.
Yeah, a lot. And then crosses, just to put that one in perspective, you know, that's where your arms cross over. And so your right hand's on your left side, left hand's on your right when you're jumping. And I don't know, you may not be aware, but the CrossFit Games, which CrossFit's a big sport these days, in particular in the US, but it's been built jump rope wise on double unders. And so those athletes are really good at double unders. And in the games, they took the best athletes in the world and they asked them to do 25 double under crosses. And only two of those athletes were able to complete 25 double under crosses, not even consecutively. And it just goes to show that, you know, you can master this skill, but you don't have competency with that tool. And it was a very humbling thing. So you, sir, are in a position right now where you could probably train and teach the best athletes in the world some new jump rope skills, because you've set the world record for the two things that totally ruined their attempts at, you know, their sport's final event. So the accomplishments that you have made shouldn't be taken lightly. Like, the some of the best athletes in the world couldn't even do 25 double under crosses, right? So kudos to you. It's so impressive.
Thank you.
Yeah. And just wanted to give some context for how hard it is to do what you did. Some people might be able to relate a little more to the CrossFit thing, but I wanted to ask you, as you were training for these world records, one, how long did you train for? And then two, what were people saying to you, like when you started out wanting to do it and leading up to it, were they giving you encouragement and advice? Were they just kind of leaving you alone to focus on it? What was the interaction with the people in your world?
All right. So for the first one, the double under, 12-hour double under. That one, it took me around 4 months to train for it. I treated it like my marathon, because I did a marathon a few years back, and I treated it just like that. So the people around me were just, I guess, they were okay. They were pretty supportive, which I'm very thankful for. But for the last one, most consecutive crosses, you would see just, yeah, I guess the people were also the same, just the right amount of support. Nothing holding me back, nothing extremely pushing me forward as well. So it's like, at least I didn't get any headwind, but still, you had to push yourself out of bed in the morning, because there's no one like cheering you on every day.
Right. It's not like a Rocky moment where you've got your coach who's waking you up at 4 a.m, making sure that you do the work. You got to do it on your own.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. That takes a lot of motivation. So parents, family, they were like, yeah, this is a good use of your time. You should be doing this, and wanted you to be pursuing it? Or were they curious why you would invest so much time into jump rope or these types of world records or these specific ones?
My family is very conservative. So they like do business, and that's life. So things like this world record all of a sudden is like totally new to them. I know that they like it, because they enjoy it as well, you know. The recognition, of course, of being in the news and all, they see their son in the news. So I think it's a pretty good thing.
Yeah. Cool. So let's just keep this challenge conversation going. And I'm going to ask you the central question to this podcast, which is, what is the hardest thing in your life you wouldn't take back?
Hardest thing that happened. Maybe I'll split it into two answers.
If that's okay. Sure.
So definitely the hardest thing that I, hardest physical challenge would be my double under record, because that was really hard and physically taxing. During the day, I was really beat up already at 6 hours. Halfway, my legs were cramping, and it was so easy just to take it easy. And I already beat the record halfway. So it's like, why? Well, why do you want to strive so much to do more? You already got the record. It was, I was already thinking, am I doing any permanent damage to my body? Well, thankfully not. I mean, yeah, we were careful enough. That was, of course, physically really, really hard. But that would be so easy to say, of course, I wouldn't take it back. Because, like, look at me. I have something to hold for the rest of my life, I
guess. Yeah.
Yeah. So that could be like the easy answer there, but it's still definitely hard. Something that I've been doing lately is being vulnerable, being open up to people. rather than being the skip man and making some whatever videos, encouraging videos, I'm being more of a friend, to chosen, to people close to me. I'm being very, I'm investing a lot of time to developing friendships and to helping people in need, whether it be financially, physically, emotionally, whatever.
Yeah.
So these things happen below the radar, below the spotlight and everything. So you don't get any positive spotlight for this. You just do it because you just do it, and I do this because I maybe care for a friend and all. So I wouldn't maybe say something very specific, but let's say recently I've been trying to help out friends very, very much in all their problems, and it is part of me trying to be a more open person. As I told you a while ago, I'm very conservative family. So it's part of me trying to be more open. Doing the world record definitely makes me more open and all, but this one is more a deep, authentic feel of openness because no one really sees you doing this. It's just you opening up, being vulnerable to people, being a helping hand to people. And because of my vulnerability of opening up, helping out people, helping out friends, sometimes you would get into situations where it would still hit, maybe bite you back or something, maybe being too helpful, being too invested with some people in giving maybe advice or giving time to people. It could affect things like my personal life, my family life and all. Yeah, so there is a trade-off. There's a trade-off. You're trying to do things, help things, but at the same time, it affects personal life. So sorry, I'm being very general here because I don't want to throw deep stuff in this podcast. But I would say that it is definitely hard for me to realize that helping people or being a good friend to people can actually also bite you back.
Mm.
But at the same time, so it's very hard because it's a weird feeling. But at the same time, I don't get anything positive, I guess, from it. No certificate, no nothing.
Yeah.
But I would say that I still wouldn't take it back because doing these things out of, let's say, out of authenticity, out of love from inside, there's so much learning experience that you get from it. There's so much things you learn about life from just dealing with people, which will, you bring on until you, I don't know, you when you get old and all. It's so nice. It's so authentic. There's no certificate anymore. It's just a friend being a friend, and and you don't get anything back. You can get bitten back. It's like, okay, this one is my friend telling me, it's like being a vet. Maybe you see an alligator, but being a vet and maybe it's in your passion to help animals, then maybe you try to maybe the alligator has a thorn or something that you try your best to take off and heal and fix this problem, but then you get bitten back. But then after that, you get bitten by the alligator. Ouch, it hurts, whatever. But then you still know you did a good thing. And it's a lifelong experience. And you don't get any certificate for that. But those things are true. Those things are authentic. And those things just come from the inside. And it's really hard, but I would definitely not take it back because that's life. That's like experiencing life.
Yeah. Hmm. So how long ago did you decide or make the transition to this, I'm going to put the phrase like selflessness or generosity of yourself? 6 months ago, 2 years ago, has it always been there and you just put more effort into it?
It's definitely just, maybe around, I don't know, maybe 5 years ago. I'm 35 now, so maybe something happened when I turned 30.
Yeah, it's a new season of life, 30 years old. Okay, so 5 years ago, was there a catalytic moment that changed that perspective for you from maybe, and I don't know what your perspective was before, but I'm guessing it was more self-centered than it is now. Was there a moment or a couple of moments that shifted your approach towards your relationships with the people in your life?
I couldn't identify just one specific, a light bulb moment shifted mindset to suddenly being a different person. I'm sure it's just little moments in life wherein you realize things.
Hmm. So over the 5 years that you've been making this concerted effort to love the people well and serve them, regardless of what comes back to you, what have you seen it do to the depth and the quality of the relationships that you have with people?
The easy answer is definitely improved. Now, when I talk to people, it's much more, I would say it's much more authentic. I can be myself, and I would just be okay whether I be judged or not, or I don't know. But maybe before, I was always, I'm from a conservative family. I would always act, just be my best self in front of you, but not really, because that's not the authentic self. Wherein now, when I talk to people, I can be a little more loose and all in with my words. It's not the best self, but actually the more authentic self. And I see myself being talking to people and forming deeper relationships because of that, because you're not just some, we're not talking in skin deep level. We're always talking at this certain deeper level now.
So what you found was, in your attempt to help people, showing your weaknesses and failures was the best way to help people?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Because it shows that we're human. Because usually when people seek help or something, they're making mistakes, of course. And people make mistakes. Why? Because we're human, and then we're all human. So I'm going to show how human I am as well.
That's so interesting. Because you think of the person who's in the position to help as having kind of the upper hand or being more put together. And it sounds like at least what you're testifying to is actually it sometimes is the opposite. I have it less put together. And when I let people know that, I'm in a position to help. Like the lower I am, the more vulnerable I am, the more of service I can be to other people.
Yes, because you make them understand that it's okay. It's okay to make mistakes. It's okay to be
human. Become a safe place.
Yeah.
I don't know what your religious beliefs are, but there's a story in the Bible where Jesus, he's talking to people and he says, hey, if you're thirsty, if you're weak, if you're broken, come to me. And you would think he'd say, he's in the middle of Israel, this like desert place, I'll give you a drink. But it's not what he says. He says instead, come to me and I'll turn you into rivers of living water. And the concept is I could help you in your problem, or I can take the problems that you have. And when they're known, when you've acknowledged them, they can become a way to solve other people's problems, right? Give them an opportunity to get a drink. And it's like what you're talking about, right? Like, you waved your hand, you said, I'm thirsty, or I have this problem. I have a vulnerability that I'm going to share with you. And now all of a sudden that thirst, that brokenness got turned into an opportunity for someone else to have their issue solved, right? It doesn't make sense logically that would be the way it works, but it's what you're describing. And it's really cool. Like in your vulnerability, you were the most almost powerful to assist someone.
Yeah, it just happened like that. And I guess what I can say now is I'm just enjoying the ride.
So 5 years into it, you can say, I'm enjoying the ride. There's nothing really bad. Probably 5 years ago, version of Ryan would have said, ooh, but I could see that going that way. And that turned into that thing. And that sounds terrible. And It sounds like the definition of bad got reworked for you.
Yeah.
Through a hardship.
Definitely, because 5 years ago, or even before that, I was like the cookie cutter. I when I talk to my friends, I say I'm like the cookie cutter. You know, live, do business, die. Something like that. That's the. But then recently, it's more like, yeah, live, trip, fall, feel the pain, love it, get up, try to do things, trip again, it's okay, get up, and just enjoy.
There's a posture of that that's like being a little kid, right? I've got little kids right now, and the oldest one's 5. They're not super conscious of what other people think of them, and so their failures are on full display. And honestly, in the moments where their failures are on full display are the times that they learn the most. Like when my kids mess up and I don't know about it, I can't really teach them through that and they don't really process it. But when, you know, everybody sees it, it's a moment for them to sit and reflect and to, you know, receive some counsel and advice, and they grow a lot faster that way. And they're just of the age where they're not worried what most people think about them. And, you know, I don't know if this is true for all kids, but I think that it's because they are so confident in who they are because of what their parents say about them. Like they have their identity rooted in something secure. I think as adults, right, like our identity, we start to search for our identity in lots of other places that sometimes betray us. And so then we start to have to hide all of those things that, you know, are our failures until we find a place where we can do that well. And it sounds like you've been able to do that with the friends that you have, which is really encouraging to hear. And it sounds really life-giving.
I have a 2-year-old son. I guess when I was a kid, being in the cookie cutter, it's very safe. It's actually very safe, especially in this side of the world. If you're in the cookie cutter of this side of the world, it's very safe and very comfortable, because you really can just go through life and, you know, the road is somewhat paved for you already.
Yeah.
But after learning all these things 5 years ago, and no, you the world is different. And it makes me think now on how to raise my kid. And it would be something like how you did it. Just let them make mistakes, because that's as long as their mistakes won't do a life threatening or life changing thing, I think it would be very useful for them to learn to fall and pick themselves up on their own.
Yeah. And the best way to encourage them to do that is to, I found anyways, as a parent, is to let them know that I make mistakes, and even let them see some of those. And then, you know, talk about how I learned from those rather than, you know, sweep them under the rug. And then it's like, oh, okay, it's safe for me to make mistakes. It's like a judgment-free zone in a way, right? That I can learn and I can grow as a result. And you do that in business too, right? Speaking of some of the other areas of your life, as a, you know, leader or manager, you would do that for your employees, and you would hope a manager would do that for you, that they can model that so that you know it's authentic what they're saying. But then when it happens, when you inevitably make a mistake, you can like bring it out into the light and learn from it rather than try to like hide it away.
I just remember just yesterday, I was in a meeting and there was a mini argument going on between two of the staff in the business. And I was like, oh, what? I was saying like, hey guys, it's okay, chill. Like no one's gonna die from this mistake. Yeah, because definitely it's not something that they would expect from the boss. I don't want to say the boss, but yeah, I mean, they wouldn't expect it, especially how things are run usually. But yeah, yesterday I was like, chill, it's okay.
Yeah, let's just learn from it and be better next time.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so hard, right? You can tell people that all you want. The best way to do it is to like go make your own mistakes and then show people that it's okay to talk about them and learn from them. I'm not naturally good at that. Like I have a little bit of a pride streak in me a lot of the time. And so it takes really concerted effort to one, slow myself down enough to like reflect and admit to myself, even that was a wrong thing to do. And then two, to be able to go to whoever was involved in that and say, look, I blew this, or I messed this up, or I think I could have done that differently, and like talk through it with them and acknowledge it. I wish I was naturally that way, but I'm not. But when I do it, there's so much fruit that comes from it.
Yeah, because I guess it's human nature, right? That there's really, of course, the pride that you have to protect, and maybe the feeling that some people might be judging, you know.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go back to this change in perspective, difficult decision that you've made to be more vulnerable with the people that are closest to you. And it sounds like the hard season for you is almost always going to be there in some way, shape, or form, right? Which is just an interesting take on this conversation in question. But talk a little bit about the advice or encouragement that you've been given from people, because I've got to believe that you've had people in your life who've done the same thing for you, who've encouraged you to do that or be that way. What things have you latched onto that people have said to you?
I would definitely say my best friend. My best friend, he's a guy that we both have our quirks and all, and I've known him 15 years now. And it's like when we do our talks and all, when we just hang out and have a drink or something, it's in those talks wherein I was so blown away with his type of perspective, which is so open compared to the other people I know. In some ways I was thinking like, why do I hang out with this guy? This is so not like me. I told you.
His cookie cutter shape is different than mine.
Yes, very, very different. Then it's like, just learning from him. But I was saying, like, I have so much friends wherein I have so much in common with, but this guy, it's like, why do I still hang out? It's a little different, but I still hang out. And then I think maybe from a YouTube video or something, I learned about the psychological safety, wherein even people fight and all, but the most productive environments are wherein people feel safe just to be themselves, wherein they don't feel judged. And I was thinking, okay, maybe that's why I want to be this guy.
So it wasn't even necessarily anything he said. It was just the environment that was created by your guys' relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for you to now flip the coin on its head, flip the situation around. Somebody is wanting to be more vulnerable, wanting to be an encouragement to people by acknowledging where they've maybe failed or their, you know, trips and falls. But it's hard, right? Like, it's hard to get over the hurdle and kind of remove the veil and let somebody see you for who you really are, because there could be judgment on the other side, whatever the reason is. What advice or encouragement would you give that person to go for it or to step into it and just be themselves?
Start slowly. Definitely. Mm-hmm. Start slowly. Whatever you feel on how to be more vulnerable or how to be more open or how to help out and be more reaching out to others. Start slowly, because if you're in the same situation like me, it would feel like you're in a cave. Let's say we're like cavemen and you're inside a cave and exploring outside. You have to take it one step at a time, because if you run outside and then you don't know, it's too careless. You can get eaten by a tiger or something.
Sure.
But if you go slowly, then the setbacks could be less painful. And it's because that if the setbacks are a little more painful, then it would be less likely that you would just go back, retreat, and go back to your cave and just say that, no, the outside world is so different and I don't want to go out there anymore. So it's really like, start slowly. And what is slowly? I don't know. What is slowly is up to you. What is slowly? How open are you now? Just be a little bit more open and just accept that things will happen, because that's why we're trying to explore things. Things might bite us back, because if things don't bite us back, then everyone would just be open in the world right now. Everyone would just be vulnerable. So just be okay, because the world is, you know, look at things at the end of the day. If when we're old or something, wouldn't we be more happy that we did something like this rather than just stay inside our caves our entire lives?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of movies about that concept with the cavemen. So yeah, that resonates with the human existence and experience pretty deeply. I love the analogy. Did you just come up with it on the spot?
Kind of.
Well, you couldn't really tell. So I think really captures it nicely. Like it also, I would think it gives you more staying power, right? Like if you go a little bit slower, you have the opportunity to stick with it longer because the fall or the run back to the cave is a little bit shorter to kind of recoup and reset and then go again, you know, versus like if you go too far, you might lose your way and the damage is, you can't reverse it almost, yeah. Right? So take it slow, almost embrace the process, it sounds like would be, I think, your words of encouragement. The last question I usually ask people is this: what's a hard thing that you're in the middle of right now? And it's interesting, right? Like what you're describing is an ongoing, ever-present hard thing, depending on the day and the time, or maybe even what failure you just had and who you need to tell. But I'll ask the question anyways, and maybe there's something else going on that you're in the middle of. So what's the hardest thing in your life right now?
Right now, it's from the setbacks I'm getting in trying to help out friends. Yeah, it's basically that, as well as everything that's the business world throwing at me right now. It's also very hard because business is business. You know, you feel you can make money, but in terms of friendships and all, it's different. It's complex. You can't just quantify it. So.
Yeah. And I'm not going to ask you to share, but it sounds like just listening to you talk about it, that you're carrying some heavy burdens on behalf of some people that are close to you. And that's a hard thing. So hopefully you're carrying them well and helping them through it. And everybody needs somebody like that in their corner. So I'm sure your friends or family or whoever it is are very thankful to have you. Now, I'm thankful that you're willing to come on and share. It's always fun to get to hear people's stories a little bit and peel back the curtain, to use some of the language we've been talking about. And hopefully, actually, I shouldn't say hopefully, I'm confident that what you've talked about and some of the things you've learned will be an encouragement for other people. So thanks for hopping on, Ryan.
Thanks for having me. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks for listening to the Do Hard Things podcast by Elite SRS. We hope you're encouraged today and have a newfound hope to persevere. Be sure to subscribe for more great episodes and conversations. And if you ever want to watch an episode, check out our YouTube channel at youtube.com/ElitesRS. Have a blessed day.